Sprite Castle. Sprite Castle. Sprite Castle. With Rob O'Hara, Sprite Castle.
Hello and welcome to Sprite Castle, the show in which I play, discuss, and review Commodore 64 games. My name is Rob Flack O'Hara, and on this episode of Sprite Castle, I will be discussing Congo Bongo. Now, do you know the name of the gorilla in Congo Bongo? You'll find out shortly what it is in this episode. This episode was made possible by my Patreon supporters, supporters like Catman, Stephen Burt, and Nathan Dagenhart. If you would like to help pick the next episode or just support my podcast, head over to patreon.com/Rob O'Hara and sign up today. Congo Bongo was published for the Commodore 64 in 1983 and 1985 by Sega. It is a game for one or two players that uses joystick or keyboard controls. Now, this is a game that was actually published by Sega Enterprises, who previously did games like Zaxxon. They did several early games for the Commodore 64, and I've covered Zaxxon on this podcast. And on that episode, we talked about why there were two completely different licensed versions of Zaxxon on the Commodore 64, which is a coincidence, because on this episode, I will be discussing why there are two completely different versions of Congo Bongo for the Commodore 64 as well. Now, this game was originally developed by Ikigami. I believe that's how you say that. The arcade version of Congo Bongo was developed by Ikigami. They were doing a deal with Nintendo. Now, if you remember, there was the whole debacle with Nintendo releasing Radar Rat Race. It wasn't as popular as what they had hoped, and so they began retrofitting those machines with new boards that were going to be Donkey Kong. That's the rare or more rare red Donkey Kong cabinets. But that deal fell through, and there were multiple lawsuits, and Ikigami had also developed Zaxxon, and they had worked with Sega previously. And so as the history of the story goes, this company set out to make a better version of Donkey Kong as a way to kind of stick it to Nintendo. So we'll talk about some of the similarities between Congo Bongo and Donkey Kong later on in the episode. Jungle Drums Pound as Congo Bongo, the cartoon adventure that pits man against monkey, takes you on the craziest, most action-packed safari ever. With fantastic three-dimensional light graphics and wonderful native sounds, Sega's Congo Bongo lures explorers of all ages to chase Bongo, the mischievous gorilla, through four vivid scenes of jungle fun. By using an 8-way joystick and a jump button for player maneuvers, players maneuver their hunter through the various scenes and avoid obstacles and dangers in his path. Now, that is the description of Congo Bongo directly from the material that shipped with the original arcade game. I believe that's also printed on the arcade game. So, I have seen several references online that refer to the nemesis or the giant gorilla in this game as Congo Bongo, and I've seen it referred to as Congo. But according to this information, his name is Bongo. Now, in the arcade version, there is a scene where Bongo sets the hunter's tent on fire, and so the entire game is really about revenge. It's about this safari hunter chasing down Bongo. And then there's also another cutscene where once you've beat all four levels of the game, he sets fire to Bongo and gets his revenge. But in the Commodore 64 version, we don't get those cutscenes. So I guess it's not really important what the hunter's motivation was, but in the arcade version, that is the motivation. Now, sometimes I talk about connections to popular movies or pop culture. And really, you know, if we're chasing, you might say in the late 70s, We've got the King Kong remake. I think that was 1976. But really what the connection with this game is the connection with Donkey Kong. Congo Bongo first appeared in arcades in 1983, and the two versions we'll be discussing were released in 1983 and 1985 for the Commodore 64. Now, primarily, we'll be discussing the 1983 version of the game, and then towards the end, we'll talk a little bit about that 1985 version and how those two compare. So looking at the box of the 1983 version, on the front of the box, there is a large cartoon piece of artwork that's really, really detailed and really great. And we can see the hunter wearing his safari hat. What are those called? A pith helmet he's wearing. He has this comically large orange mustache, which may or may not be a reference to Mario and his mustache. He's surrounded by several monkeys, and then we can see a portion of the first level in the background depicted. So it's a really, really great artwork. I really enjoy it. I mean, this is like poster quality artwork. I really like it. Across the top, it says for the Commodore 64 home computer, and then we have the logo, Congo Bongo. And then at the bottom, oh, it does say official arcade version, which is interesting because this version has a lot of differences and has a couple of major differences between it and the arcade version. So it's interesting that they put that. But developers and publishers were always quick to let potential customers know that it was a port of an arcade game, because that, you know, that was the dream back then, was to be able to play arcade games in your home. So that's why it says that. But at the bottom is the biggest text of all. It's bigger than that message about being an arcade port. It's way bigger than telling you it's for the Commodore 64, and it is probably four times larger than the title of the game, Congo Bongo, and that is the Sega logo. It's not four times as big, but it is at least twice as big and a little bit larger than that. It is in bright letters. It says Sega, and again, this is pretty popular at the time. Companies wanted to let you know who was behind this, and Sega really did that on all of their titles. You could always see a big Sega logo. Now, in the back, we get two pictures of two different levels. Now, if you were familiar with the arcade version, you might think, well, where are the other two? Well, we're going to talk about that, but spoiler, this only has two of the four levels from the arcade. The pictures that are on the back of the box are clearly not from this version of the game. They are some sort of art mock-up. You could look, and they're way more detailed and look much better than the version that we're going to be discussing today. We have a bit of text. It says, you're on a jungle safari packed full of wild and zany adventures. Climb the cliffs to the top of Monkey Mountain as you try to reach the jungle's most mischievous gorilla. Don't get clobbered by the coconuts he'll throw your way. Watch out for menacing monkeys. You'll come to Lazy Lake, where you'll see raging rhinos and hollering hippos. Leap from lily pad to lily pad across the treacherous lake filled with ferocious man-eating fish and other jungle dangers. But be careful. One slip and it's safari heaven. I'll go ahead and mention that down at the bottom there are, it talks about some features of the game. It says one or two players, arcade quality 3D color graphics, two tropical scrolling screen displays, laugh-packed action, and adventures. So let's talk about a couple of things that stand out to me. And the biggest one, and you know I'm a stickler for this, is the names of the levels. It says you will be climbing up Monkey Mountain, and those letters are capitalized. So this is a proper noun, Monkey Mountain. And then it also refers to the second level as Lazy Lake. Those are capitalized. And by the way, there's a lot of alliteration in this little paragraph. Not only do we have the M's in Monkey Mountain and the L's in Lazy Lake, but it talks about hollering hippos. It talks about raging rhinos, and it inserts something in the middle, but it talks about ferocious fish. So kudos to whoever wrote that, but There's an interesting discrepancy here on the level title. So, in the manual, and again, this is the 1983 version. I'll keep saying that over and over. It shows that you can play this game with a keyboard or a joystick in port 2. Now, it's hard to imagine people owning Commodore 64s that were also playing games that didn't own a joystick, especially when Commodore did one of the most genius things ever, and it probably wasn't an intentional design, a hardware design. It was probably to save money, but they put DB9 joystick ports, and there were millions of Atari joysticks out there. So, everybody, it seemed like to me, that had a Commodore 64, if nothing else, had some old drawer full of Atari joysticks. So it's interesting that they went through the trouble to add keyboard controls, but it is a relatively early release, 1983, so maybe, at that time, they were worried about people not having joysticks. But if you look at the keyboard, there's a little pattern of 9 keys. So to move diagonal up or left is the letter T, to move up is Y, and to move up right is U. And then if you could just imagine the keys below that, that's, left, right, bottom left. But you do have those diagonal controls, and we will talk about that again and again in this episode, that this game is a platform game, but it is a 2.5, they say 3D in this, but it's a 2.5, it's that isometric view. So you're not just moving up and down and left and right, you're having to constantly move in diagonals to stay on platforms and make jumps. So that's why you have all these diagonal settings in the keyboard settings. It also says to make the hunter jump, press the shift key and the Commodore key, and you have to press them at the same time. How terribly frustrating would that have been for people who downloaded the game and didn't get the instructions and were trying to play this with a keyboard? I was a master of touching every key on the keyboard and figuring out how to play a game and moving joysticks around and figuring out. But, that's something I think I would have done, is press 2 keys at the same time, shift and Commodore key, to figure out how to get this guy to jump. So, strange choice, but there it is. The manual goes through, it talks about how to beat each level. I mean, it tells you what the goal is, and essentially the goal is always to get to where Bongo the Gorilla is. He's always in the upper right, you always start in the upper left, so that is the goal. But it does tell you in general, like what to avoid, what, where to stand, what the enemies could do, how you can die on each level. So those are all included in the manual. At the end of the manual, we get advertisements for Star Trek and Buck Rogers. Now, those are also Sega titles that were released for the Commodore 64. And what all these titles have in common is that they were all cartridge-based games. So this 1983 version of Congo Bongo was originally released as a cartridge for the Commodore 64. Now, I don't know. I can make an assumption. I have to believe that cartridges were much more expensive to manufacture than churning out floppy disks, but it had to be a copy protection thing. That's the only thing I can think of. Plus, you do eliminate a lot of problems. Like, if you sell games on floppy disks, if someone damages their floppy disk, they're going to want a replacement, or the disk may wear out. And cartridges, I have lots of Commodore 64 cartridges that are 40 years old. They all still work great. So Commodore cartridges were pretty resilient. You didn't have to blow in them like Nintendo cartridges. And I know all the controversies about that. But so maybe that was the option. Maybe it had to do with piracy. Maybe it had to do with resilience, of not having to worry about these cartridges wear out. But regardless, the reason, this was a cartridge release. Now, because it's a cartridge release, there's not a lot of loading things that show up. When you start this game, it immediately pops into a title screen that says Congo Bongo. Now, I always thought that this was done in PET ASCII characters, like the keyboard characters, the artwork, because that's what it looks like. It looks like Congo Bongo in just squares, and then kind of like that fake 3D thing where you would use the sloped keys and things to make a shadow behind it. But if you look at it closely, those little sloped angles are kind of blocky, and they're not smooth as if they were done with the keyboard. So not only are they not the simplest form of graphics available on the Commodore 64? But they're even more simplistic than that. I would say, and I'm trying to think real hard here, this may be the lamest title screen of any Commodore 64 game that I have reviewed. I mean, unless it's just something with plain text or something like that. I mean, it just seems like they put zero effort into this. Like they gave it to a 12-year-old and said, what can you do in 5 minutes? And this is what he came up with. So once you get past that, the menu screen demands that you tell it whether you're going to play one or two players and choose whether you're going to play with a joystick or a keyboard. Like, you don't get game action, you know, in the background, like the game over a track screen kind of thing. You don't get anything. You don't get any graphics. You just get these two prompts that you have to put in. And then once you do that, the game immediately starts. So again, you have to remember this would have been a cartridge release. So no loading time. If you're a fan of You Don't Know Flack, there's no loading time. It's immediate. You put in one or two player, you put in joystick or keyboard, and boom, the game starts. So level one is the same as the first level of the arcade game. And the manual says the goal of this is, or it tells you that you have been taken to Jungle Mountain. Now, if you recall, the back of the box calls this Monkey Mountain. So we already have our first discrepancy here. And this happens a lot. You know, the people that were making the manuals sometimes didn't talk to the people who were making the box artwork. Like, there were discrepancies. But all of the source material of all of this should have been the arcade game. So why didn't they not just use the levels as they're known in the arcade? I don't really know. But it tells you that you're trying to reach Monkey Plateau. Now, if it's Monkey Mountain, wouldn't you just say the peak of Monkey Mountain or the top of Monkey Mountain? Why does the top have a different name? I mean, it's capitalized also, Monkey Plateau. So it just, why does it have so many names? This is not that hard. Pick a name and go with it. Again, if you've not seen Congo Bongo, you can think of it as a Donkey Kong style type game where you're at the bottom. You got to get to the top where the gorilla is. The hunter, which is you, starts at the bottom left corner of the screen. Bongo is at the upper right. Again, this is a isometric layout. And so you have Bongo at the top throwing coconuts instead of barrels. So you have to avoid the coconuts. They kind of come in clusters of two or three. So when there's a break, it's pretty easy to run in between them. There are also some random monkeys that are running around in the upper right-hand corner that you have to avoid. They get more aggressive and do more things as the game progresses. At first, they will try to hop on your back and slow you down. Eventually, they will. They could actually hold you up in the air and throw you over the side. So you just have to avoid those. If one does get on you, you could jump up and down in place, I believe, three times, and the monkey will fall off of the hunter. But again, the goal of the first level is to reach Bongo, the gorilla, and that will take you to level number two. Other things to mention on this screen, you have your score in the top left, and you have the number of remaining hunters. In the top right is a bonus that is counting down that starts at 5,000, which might seem familiar if you've played a different game starring a gorilla that was made by Nintendo. In level two, the manual refers to this level as the Great River. But again, the back of the box, what did it call it? Lazy Lake. So again, I mean, there's some laziness going on here. It's not with the lake. It's whoever was supposed to be spot checking the facts in this manual. Again, on level two, you are moving from the bottom left to the top right. Again, you are crossing a large river. And the way that you do that is you have to jump on lily pads and the backs of hippos and fish and occasionally these little islands that you have to stop on. So if the first level of the game spiritually is from Donkey Kong, the second level is like the second half of Frogger. That is literally, it is presented in a different way. It's an isometric type view instead of straight top-down view. But that's what this game is. You are trying to cross a river by leaping on the back of things that are moving in different patterns. So Not a lot of originality in the design of these two levels. Now, the other two levels that are in the arcade are more original, but those don't appear in this version. So what we get here is a level that's kind of like Donkey Kong and a level that's kind of like Frogger. So we talked about the controls. You've got these keyboard controls, which God help you if you could actually do these eight keys and use the two buttons to jump and get through some of the pixel perfect jumps that appear in this game. It's obviously much easier to play with a joystick. We've already said that it is a isometric game, so it has that same layout, kind of like Zaxxon, like Qbert. You know, later games, Paperboy, Marble Madness. So all of those games, I guess I would take Paperboy out of that list because Paperboy is pretty intuitive. But all those games, you just have to get used to. Are you pressing diagonal? Some of those turn joysticks 45 degrees so that when you press up, you're moving up right in the game. But this one's not like that. So you're going to be doing a lot of diagonal moves. Now, back in the day, if you played this on the Commodore 64 and you used an Atari joystick, the diagonals were pretty easy to hit. If you are playing this on a modern PC through emulation and you happen to be using something like a PlayStation controller, like you're using the D-pad, it's much more difficult to consistently hit those diagonals with a D-pad. So it's a little bit easier with a traditional joystick. So if you're having trouble playing this game, that's something to consider. But at the end of the day, this is a platform game. But it's just presented in that isometric view, which makes it much more difficult than it probably should have been. So, again, I'm beating a dead horse to say that this is the 1983 version. You know, I would say it's amazing to me that for most of my life, I did not really think of this as, you know, a 2.5 or isometric version of Donkey Kong. But there are so many similarities when you start breaking it down and looking at Congo Bongo and comparing it to Donkey Kong. And not just with the actual levels themselves, you know, but there are a lot of similarities there too. Like in the first level, of course, you are climbing up just like in Donkey Kong, trying to reach a gorilla just like in Donkey Kong. Of course, in Nintendo's game, the gorilla is throwing barrels, and in this game, he's throwing coconuts, but it's the same idea. You have a bonus timer that starts at 5,000. Now, later on in this one, it goes up, but I mean, it's the same number, and the way that the bonus is presented, it looks just like Donkey Kong. And in both games, of course, the main character, I thought this was interesting. I was just thinking about this, that both characters don't have a name. Like a Donkey Kong, you know, that really predates Mario. He was just Jumpman. He was just a generic guy. You know, the bad guy, Donkey Kong, he's who the game was named after, right? And in this, it just calls you the Hunter. All lowercase. Like, you're not, you know, Mr. Hunter, Mr. A, you're just a hunter that has a beef with this gorilla. And, you know, this game takes place in the Congo, and the gorilla's name is Bongo. So, again, it's like the bad guy is who's in the title, you know. And, you know, now that I think about it, I didn't think about this, but I guess Zaxxon is the creature that's at the end of Zaxxon. So maybe that was Sega's ploy all along. You know, I talked about how the first level is pretty much like Donkey Kong in design. The second one is pretty much like Frogger. You know, I don't know. It just, by changing the perspective, I guess I never put two and two together, but, you know, they really are spiritually versions, you know, updated versions of those games. Also, another similarity, now that I think about it, is that, you know, in the arcade, Congo Bongo had four levels, and once you finish the fourth level, the game starts over, but at a higher difficulty, which is exactly what Donkey Kong does as well. Now, on this one, the game does get harder as you beat the first two levels. Now, the first level is very easy to beat in this game. I mean, most people should beat it the first or second time that they try. They should be able to complete level one. Level two is much more difficult because of the jumping. And you have, I mean, every jump has to be not exactly pixel perfect, but pretty close. And they're all diagonal jumps on moving things. It's hard to judge the depth and the distance of those things. So it's a really hard level to beat. And it's not because of like a game where you would say, oh, this is really complicated or there's a lot of stuff. It's not hard because of that. It's hard because of the view. It's hard because of the way the game was designed. But and once you beat that, the game, this version starts back over with level one, but that would be like level one, round two. So this is where the monkeys on the first level will start to jump on you. And then if you get to like level three, this is when they will pick you up and throw you off the level. Again, if you just jump up and down a few times, you could shake the monkeys off of you. When you get to level two, round two, you will see that the lily pads start shrinking in size. And the fish will start opening and closing their mouths, which is very similar to the alligators in Frogger that open and close their mouths when you try to jump on them as well. So the difference between both of these games, this and Donkey Kong and Frogger, I mean, I'm kind of beating a dead horse here, but it's that isometric view, you know. And the thing about that view is that it barely works in the arcade version. It looks really cool in the arcade version, but the arcade version, you know, on arcade hardware compared to something like any 8-bit computer, you know, it had a more powerful processor. It had better graphics, and because of that, you know, it had better controls, and, you know, those controls made it easier to make those jumps. But when we're looking at the Commodore 64, you know, it's a lower resolution. It moves a little bit slower, and it turns, you know, what I would say like that, the original Congo Bongo from being, you know, somewhat difficult to be something that's like almost impossible. It's really difficult, you know. So, you know, I kind of beat the graphics, you know, to death. I will talk about the music. Now, the arcade version has music, and this does have music that plays in the background, and boy, will you wish it didn't. The music is not good. It's very simple. It's very short, and it's a repeating tune, and the tune is pretty much done one, you know, like one note. It's not like chords or anything like that. So the music is not good. The sound effects are very simple. Other than the interesting part of the perspective, it's, you know, it's not great. I don't want to say it. It's not great. The manual does include some gameplay strategies. These are things, if you've played the arcade, you probably know. But on the first level, there are some places where you can stand, like to the far left, to avoid all the coconuts. There's kind of a little safe area. So if you're having trouble, because the coconuts come down at a diagonal angle, but they're bouncing, it's really hard to judge the depth. So if you just scoot over to the left, that's kind of a little safe space. We talked about jumping up and down to get the monkeys off of you. It doesn't really give a lot of hints for level two, but what I would say on level two is just watch it. Now, there is a bonus that will count all the way down, and if you wait too long, you'll die. But, you know, it's kind of worth it to spend a man and just watch the pattern. See where the, because the animals are all, like, they just run a predictable pattern over and over. So watch where they go. See where you can jump. See where you need to time those jumps. And then after you play it, you know, more than a couple times, you'll learn those patterns. But it's just kind of worth it to, you know, spend a minute and watch that. But the thing is, if you watch it too long, the bonus will run out and you won't be able to beat the level. So, but, you know, the first time you play it, it's kind of, that's kind of a good hint. There's a lot of ways to get points in this game. The manual talks all about the scoring. Again, you have the bonus that starts counting down on level one. That is 5,000. And then each level past that, it goes up increments by 1,000. I think it stops at 9,000. So once you've gone through the levels you know, a few times, it'll start at 9,000. You get 10 points for every step the hunter takes. So that's a little bit like Dig Dug, in which just moving earns you points. If you jump on the back of a hippo or a fish or a lily pad, you get 100 points. If you jump across the chasm, that's 500 points. And it does say that you get an extra hunter at 10,000 points. So there is hope if you stick with this one long enough. Now, I talked a little bit about those discrepancies. You know, in the manual for this game, it calls the first level Jungle Mountain and the second level the Great River. On the back of the box of this exact same version, it refers to that as Monkey Mountain, not Jungle Mountain, and it calls it Lazy Lake, not the Great River, right? The arcade version has names for all these levels, and the first level is Primate Peak. It's not Monkey Mountain, and it's not Jungle Mountain. It's Primate Peak. And then you have Snake Lake and Rhino Ridge. Those are levels that are not in this version. And then the fourth level is called Lazy Lagoon, which, again, is not Lazy Lake and is not the Great River. So why? I'm baffled. I'm literally baffled. Those levels had names. So why wouldn't you just use the same names? It drives me crazy. I got to get off that. It's just a personal Sega. In the arcade manual, it does refer to the monkey as Bongo or the gorilla as Bongo, but at the end of the Commodore 64 manual, it does call him Congo Bongo. So again, that's another discrepancy. His name was established. His name was Bongo. So I don't like that they casually refer to him as Congo Bongo. Although, you know, maybe that's a nickname. Like, his name is Bongo, but he lives in the Congo. I mean, how can you avoid that rhyme? You know what I mean? So while all these versions, you know, do have little differences, I would say that one thing that's they all have in common is that Bongo always throws coconuts. Did I ever tell you that I'm allergic to coconut? It's like eating hair. Like, I can't get it down my throat. I like coconut flavor, but man, do I hate coconuts.
Crack, crack, crack the egg into the bowl. Crack, crack, crack the egg into the bowl.
Talking snack.
Welcome to the Sprite Castle Dining Hall. I've got some of my friends gathered with me. We've got Paradroid, Richard Smith, and David Cavallari. You will be glad to know that we are not serving coconuts today. I hate coconuts. But in honor of Congo Bongo, we have a nice spread here of baked cakes. We have a large bread spread served with pizza fritza. By the way, pizza fritza is French fries that have been put together in a pile and smothered with pizza toppings. It is a real thing. Look it up. We're also serving mahi-mahi, which, give me a break. Mahi rhymes with rami. Mahi rhymes with mahi. I can't even say it. It's so silly. And for dessert, we will be having Nutter Butters and Jelly Bellies. So all of those are in honor of the great Congo Bongos. While everyone is sitting down to our rhyme-themed meal, I've got a few Commodore 64 releases to talk about. The first is a hardware release. This is not software. This is the new Commodore 64 Edition keyboard from 8-Bit Do. Now, 8-Bit Do has released a couple of these previously. These are not full, 101, 101 key keyboards. These are 87 key keyboards, which means basically they don't have a number pad on the right-hand side. It says on their website that these are compatible with Windows and Android. They can connect to a computer or tablet using Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or USB. Now, if you've not seen this thing, it is styled very, very similar to a Commodore 64 keyboard. The metal part, the base part of the keyboard, I said metal, I don't know if it's metal, but the base part is the tan Commodore 64 color. The keys are the dark brown color. So when you look at this, obviously, it's not going to fool anybody. You're not going to, it's not raised up like a bread bin Commodore 64, you know. If you've seen the 8-bit Do keyboards, it is identical to that. It's just like a color palette swap, I guess. The keys don't have those PET ASCII graphics on the front of them, but it does have the Commodore 64 red power light, which is on. I think that's really cool. It also comes with what I would say, well, across the top left, like where the normal Commodore 64 badge and those things are, is a set of programmable keys across the top. So you can set those to be macros. You can use it to adjust the volume, things like that. Maybe when mine arrives, spoiler, I may use it for streaming so that I can stop and start recording and do things like that. This also comes with what I would call the world's largest keyboard or the world's largest joystick. I saw this in the ad. I don't even know how to explain this. I think it calls it action buttons or something. But there are two buttons that look like they're the size of those Staples That Was Easy things that they used to sell. And then a joystick. And I can't tell if they physically connect to one another, like they connect like Legos or something. But it's almost the size of the keyboard. So imagine a joystick that's as wide as your computer keyboard that has a joystick and two buttons. I mean, the buttons are, I don't know, 4 inches around, 5 inches. They're gigantic. So, but it comes with it. So, you know, I may try it, but it's a little strange. It is a little strange. Now, this is currently available for pre-order on Amazon. Again, 8-Bit Do had what they called their Famicom or their Fami edition of the keyboard, which sold for $89.99. They have the N edition, which looks like a very old school IBM keyboard. This one is currently on presale on for US for $109. There's also a link on their website for pre-orders for the UK, but that one is currently out of stock. So I know maybe the Commodore 64 was so much more popular in the UK that that's why that one is out of stock and the US one is still available. I don't know, but the pre-order price is $109. So for that, you're going to get an 87 key keyboard that you could use with your computer or with, it says with Android. So maybe, you know, I mean, it's USB keyboard, so you could use that with maybe a Raspberry Pi. I'm hoping maybe I can use that with my Mister. I think that would be a good solution. Again, Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or whatever. So it says the delivery will be the end of May. So that is when mine will be arriving, when that thing shows up. I should mention that also it's a clickable keyboard. I don't know, but like it switches, you know. So it does look to be like a fairly decent quality keyboard. And by golly, it should be for $100. So anyway, when that thing arrives, we will talk about it here on Sprite Castle. For game releases, I saw that I have not tried this, that Prince of Persia has been ported to the VIC-20. Now, Prince of Persia was released on the Commodore 64 a while back, and it required an additional RAM expansion pack, and that is the case with the VIC-20 as well. So if you want to play Prince of Persia on the VIC-20, you're going to need two things. One, you're going to need a 35K RAM expansion, and you're going to need a disk drive. So those are... Now, it says that on the release. It says you need a disk drive. I don't know if you have one of those other solutions where you could load things from, you know, an SD card or something on the VIC-20. I mean, it seems like that would work, but that's what it says. So maybe it should say disk drive emulator, but don't quote me on that. Those are the requirements listed, but the RAM expansion, there's no getting around that. You're going to need that to cram a game like Prince of Persia into the memory banks of the VIC-20. I played a game called The Last Defender, which was released by LC Games. This is a really fun new game. I would almost describe it as the bust-a-move type game where, you know, you're the guys at the bottom of the screen and there are invaders coming down from the top. So it just reminds me of that because you're running left and right and you're shooting things that are coming down that are round, kind of aliens that are like that, but they don't split or anything like that. So, but it's very fun. It's very fast and very great, new, what I would call new style graphics. It just looks really good. It has great music. So if you like those types of games, be sure to check that out. I also played Spinning Image by Carlton Hanley. Carlton Hanley, if you've listened to this show or if you follow new Commodore 64 releases, you're probably familiar with Carlton's name. He did Millie and Molly. He did Blockheads, which I played on a stream one time, and I think Carlton responded because I really, really tried to play it. I didn't know what I was doing, you know, and I always feel bad if I stream a game and I haven't read the instructions because it's in my opinion, you're kind of like giving a bad presentation of someone else's game. I went on to learn that Blockheads game, and it is so much fun. And so I played this Spinning Image. It is a puzzle game, so if you don't like puzzle games, this might not be your bag. But essentially what you're trying to do is get an image on the left-hand side of the screen to look like the one on the right, and you shoot blocks. So you can shoot away blocks or add blocks, and also the image spins. So, you may have to rotate it to match what's on the other side of the screen. It's a lot of fun, you know, and one of those types of games where you say, oh, I'm just going to try it out, and all of a sudden, you know, you're trying to get level after level after level. So if you like those type of puzzle games, check out Spinning Image. Another one I played was called Cats and Critters. This is a platform game by Nelly Byte Software. Basically, you're just trying your cats, and there's a platform, and you're trying to catch little critters, things that are falling down. It's fun. I will say that the jumping mechanism of the cats is kind of odd, like the arc that they jump. So that takes some getting used to, but it's a really fun game. It's really cute. It's a little platform game. Like, it takes no learning. You can just jump in and play that. And finally, I played Metal Mayhem. This is a fun game. Now, this is one that you're definitely going to need two people for. But Metal Mayhem, imagine combat for the Atari 2600 where you had tanks, right? And each guy starts on their own side, and each guy has a flag. So you're trying to capture the other person's flag. I guess I could have compared it to Capture the Flag. But it looks more like combat where you're in tanks. But your side of the screen and your opponent's side of the screen are greatly zoomed in. So you can't always tell where he is, and he can't tell where you are by looking at the screen. So you each have your own view. It's not just one big maze where you can easily see where each other are, which adds a really fun component to this game. So that's called Metal Mayhem. If you got two players, you have a friend who also likes playing old games, this is one that you'll definitely want to check out. If you'd like a seat in the Sprite Castle where you can come into the dining hall and have rhyming foods, I think they've just broken into the Nutter Butters and the Jelly Belly. Oh, yeah, those are popcorn flavor. Yeah, and it's the Jelly Belly thing. If you'd like to help pick games or just get behind the scenes things, go to patreon.com/Rob O'Hara and check out all the tiers that I have available for Patreon. While everybody's finishing those snacks, let's get back to this episode's game. The reviews of this version of Congo Bongo, the 1983 release, weren't that great. Lemon 64 has a score of 6.5. There are a few reviews, but my favorite is from Commodore User, who gave it a 40%. And the first line of their review says, "Congo Bongo, what's gone wrongo?" And I think that really kind of sums up what has happened here, you know. I have to wonder if the decision to only include two levels instead of four was done because of the limited space, the limitation of putting it on a cartridge. Cartridge would not have as much storage as a floppy disk, so maybe that's why that was done. So let's talk about the 1985 release. Now, the 1985 release, it's difficult to find information because when people go, oh, Commodore 64 game, Congo Bongo. And so they don't say, is it the Congo Bongo 1983 version or Congo Bongo 1985 version? You know, a lot of people just say, and a lot of people back then only knew of one version, right? Whatever version that they were familiar with. So the 1985 version is a official release. It still says that it's by Sega, and it was released in 1985. So this version was released on floppy disks, not on cartridge, which meant they had a lot more space to store levels and other information. So real quick, on the 1985 version, when you boot it up, the first thing that you see is a giant opening graphic. It's got Congo Bongo. It's got the character. I mean, it's great. It's really good. It just blows the old one out of the water, you know. So I mean, right off the bat, this one has a much better presentation. It has better graphics. The graphics are much better than the 1983 version. It's much closer to the arcade version, I would say the sound is much better. You know, it has music that is done with chords. So here's just a short comparison. I'm going to play a sample from the 1983 version. And then here is a sample from the 1985 version. The biggest difference between these two versions is that the 1985 release has all four levels. So all the levels that appear in the arcade version appear in the 1985 version as well. Now, a lot of times when people refer to Congo Bongo on the Commodore 64, they are talking about the original version. They are talking about the 1983 version. A lot of people never saw the 1985 version because it was 2 years later, and you have to put yourself into that time period. 2 years was a long time, you know. 1981, what's a 1981? In 1981, we have Berserk, right? And we have Defender. That's a 1981 title. In 1983, we have Dragon's Lair. So, I mean, 2 years back then was a really long time. And not only would it have been a long time in development cycles, but it's a long time in people's memory. So people that played an arcade game in 1983 did not want to get the floppy disk version in 1985, right? They wanted it in 1983. But the other problem here, I think, is that even though it's a much better version, it's kind of like too little too late, you know? Because if you liked Congo Bongo, and I mean, I guess I should say this, Congo Bongo was not a huge arcade hit. Like, today we think of it as a classic, but, you know, it didn't set the world on fire. Like, nobody was getting rid of Donkey Kong machines to make room for Congo Bongo. But, so, I mean, it's not that huge of a hit. And then they sold a version of it in 1983. So the people that wanted to play Congo Bongo bought the 1983 version. So to come up with another version that's 2 years later, I mean, how many people are going to buy, you know, an updated version of the same game? I just feel like they killed the market for their own title, you know. And like I said, Congo Bongo wasn't that big of a hit in the first place. So to release two versions, a second version 2 years later, I just don't think a lot of people bought it or saw it. Now, pirates probably got it later because you would look up Congo Bongo and that might be the version you got. So, you know, that's a possibility. But as far as paying customers and things like that, I just can't imagine it sold that well. Now, pretty much every 8-bit console and system had a version of Congo Bongo. I mean, on computers, you've got, and I'm not going to name them all, but you've got like the Atari 8-bit, you've got the VIC-20, you've got PC, you got Apple II, TI-99. So all the 8-bit computers got versions of Congo Bongo. But also all the consoles got versions of Congo Bongo. There's an Atari 2600 version, Intellivision, ColecoVision. Now, here's the thing. They're like every version of Congo Bongo is different. Every one of them like takes liberties with the game and the game design, because those systems, like if you think about the Atari 2600, right? And we all know that the Atari 2600, the hardware was designed to play Pong, basically. It was designed, you know, to have an opponent on each side, a bullet, and a mirrored background. It was not designed to make an isometric game. You know, it just wasn't designed to do that. The Intellivision controller doing all those diagonal things, come, I mean, it's terrible. By the way, the Atari 2600 level 2, that level is not isometric. It's top-down, just like Frogger. So every version changed. It took Congo Bongo as a source and then changed it as something that it could do on its hardware. And some are more faithful transition or translations than others. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they are all a little different. So if you've got a favorite system, you know, just check out Congo Bongo on that system, but it's going to be different than all the other versions. Now, there was a rumor that Congo Bongo 2 was being worked on for the Atari 2600, but that got canceled due to the video game crash of 1983. So there was not a Congo Bongo 2. Now, Sega released Congo Bongo for several different systems. There are versions that appeared in compilations. I think the PSP had one, maybe. I don't know, but Sega compilations that run things. But if you're a fan of Congo Bongo, there's one thing that you need to track down. There is a Japanese release. If you've never seen these, they were called Sega Ages. We didn't get them here, but what they did was they would release like a tribute to a game. Like there's a Commando release, right? And so there's a release for Congo Bongo, and it may have multiple games on the same disc. But this title, again, this is PlayStation 2, and this is Japanese only. They have the arcade version, but then they made an updated version. So it's Congo Bongo, but all the graphics have been updated, you know, for like a modern console. And it's really neat. I mean, spiritually, it is Congo Bongo, right? But it's got updated sound. It's really, really cool. So if you like Congo Bongo, that's worth tracking down, the Sega Ages release for the PlayStation 2. If you would like to own an original copy of Congo Bongo for the Commodore 64, there's a version right now selling on eBay for $40, and that is a complete in-box version of the cartridge. If you don't need the box and you just want the cartridge or the floppy disk, you can get it much cheaper. I've seen those go for anywhere from $10 to $15. Not a super rare game for the Commodore 64. Now let's talk about my personal memories of Congo Bongo.
Memories.
So one of the things that I've talked about on this show and on Cactus Flax and things in other podcasts is that I have very specific memories of where I played arcade games for the first time. I've talked about those on shows. I played Crossbow for the first time at my local skating rink. I played Moon Patrol for the first time at a local grocery store. I just remember where these places were when I first played a game. So it's kind of interesting that I have no memory of playing Congo Bongo. Congo Bongo just must not have been at any of my local arcades. It's a game that I didn't see till later. Probably, you know, when I started going in my town, we had several arcades, but they were all relatively small. I mean, we're talking 20 or 30 machines, but you know, maybe when I went to the mall later, one of those arcades, I might have seen Congo Bongo there, but I just, whatever it was, it never made an impression on me. Now, the Commodore 64, I had the 1983 release, and you know, it was okay, but with no real connection to the arcade game, and because it was so difficult to play with that isometric layout, I just didn't play it that much. I played it, you know, I'm sure I played it and I rolled it and got back to level one, and I probably walked away from the game after that. It wasn't one that I played a lot back when I was a primary Commodore 64 user. Now, when I saw the 1985 version, I was blown away. It is so much better than that original release. And you know, if that had been the version that they had released, and maybe not 1985, but 1984, and if they had skipped that first release and just waited a little bit of time, you know, Pac-Man for the Atari or Pac-Man for the Commodore didn't come out the same day that the arcade version came out. It took time to develop those things. So if they had spent that time, waited a little bit, and released the disc version first, or as the only Congo Bongo release for the Commodore 64, I think it might have a different place in Commodore 64 history. I think people would have, you know, better and more favorable memories of playing this game. But that's just not what happened. Everybody got that first version, and I don't think a lot of people, when they saw a re-release, I don't think that they necessarily went and got it, or you know, they may not have even known about it. I recently replayed this game. You know, I went and played, and one of the things that, you know, that isometric view on level two, when the things are moving and you're trying to jump, you know, it just doesn't work, you know. And this is what I would say. Think about all the great classic isometric platform games. It's a pretty short or non-existent list, right? So the way that I see this game historically, I don't see it as a classic game. I see it as a classic experiment. You know, it was like, it was the time everybody was competing with everybody. Everybody was trying different things. And this is something that Sega tried. I'm not sure that it worked. It's the arcade version, it's a fun looking game. It has great music. The Commodore 1983 version is not that good compared to the arcade version. I think it's just an experiment and someone went, you know, this is not the way we should make platform games, and everybody agreed and they didn't do it again. For graphics, I give the 1983 version of Congo Bongo 3 out of 5 coconuts. It's okay, it's not great, but it's not terrible. For music, I give it 2 out of 5 coconuts. The music is pretty lame, and the sound effects, maybe I'll give it a 1 out of 5 coconuts. Maybe I'll give it a 2. 1 I would say it was like actually offensive, and they're not offensive, but it's so simplistic. It's just like they didn't put a lot of effort into it. For the 1985 version, I will add coconuts to all those scores. I'll give it 4 coconuts. For the graphics, I'll give the music a 4, and I'll give the sound probably a 3. It's definitely the better version of the two. But overall, I'm going to give Congo Bongo, regardless of which version you play, 3 coconuts. The problem isn't the graphics or the sound. At the end of the day, it is the design, you know. And in the battle of guerrilla games, I have to say this one remains on the bottom platform. Thanks again for tuning into Sprite Castle. If you have feedback about this or any episode of the show, you can email me directly at robohara@robohara.com. Join the conversation on Facebook at facebook.com/robcast. Follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Commodore. Come chat with me on the Amigos Retro Gaming Discord server or leave a message on the podcast hotline, which is 405-486-YDKF. This episode of Sprite Castle was made possible by my Patreon supporters. Those are supporters like Bill Spear, David Hearn, and Jason Warrens. If you would like to help pick games or be featured on future episodes of Sprite Castle, read behind-the-scenes blog posts, watch weekly videos, get access to the Amigos Retro Gaming Discord, and other additional perks, support tiers start at just $2 a month. To find out more, visit patreon.com/RobOhara. Sprite Castle is available on all major podcast providers, including the official Amigos podcast feed at anchor.fm/Amigos podcast. I think that's actually changed. I think they've converted over to Spotify now, so I will update that in the future. More details, though, are about this show and all my other shows are available over at podcast.robohara.com. News and game details for Sprite Castle come from websites such as Commodore News, Indie Retro News, the Commodore Scene Database, Lemon 64, and Moby Games. Hey, thanks again for listening. Now get back to shaking monkeys off your back, and we'll see you here next time on Sprite Castle.